Hey, boo.
We're continuing chapter 15 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. They were at this party, I think, and they just bumped into Professor Trelawney. "Hello," said Luna politely to Professor Trelawney.
"Good evening, my dear," said Professor Trelawney, focusing on Luna with some difficulty. Harry could smell cooking sherry again. "I haven't seen you in my classes lately."
"No, I got friends this year," said Luna.
"Oh, of course," said Professor Trelawney with an angry, drunken titter. "Or Dobbin, as I prefer to think of him. You would have thought, would you not, that now that I am returned to the school, Professor Dumbledore might have got rid of the horse. But no, we share classes. It is an insult, frankly, an insult. Do you know..."
Professor Trelawney seemed too tipsy to have recognized Harry. Under the cover of her furious criticisms of Ferenz, Harry drew closer to Hermione and said, "Let's get something straight. Are you planning on telling Ron that you interfered at keeper tryouts?" Hermione raised her eyebrows. "Do you really think I'd stoop that low?" Harry asked her shrewdly. "Hermione, if you can ask out McGlaggan..." "There's a difference," said Hermione with dignity. "I've got no plans to tell Ron anything about what might or might not have happened at keeper tryouts."
"Good," said Harry feverishly. "Because he'll just fall apart again and we'll lose the next match."
"Quidditch," said Hermione angrily. "Is that all boys care about? Cormac hasn't asked me one single question about myself. No, I've been just treated to 100 great saves made by Cormac McLaggen nonstop ever since. Oh no, here he comes."
She moved so fast, it was as though she had disapparated. One moment she was there, the next she had squeezed between two guffawing witches and vanished.
"Seen Hermione?"
asked McLaggen, forcing his way through a throng a minute later.
"No, sorry," said Harry, and he turned quickly to join in Luna's conversation, forgetting for a split second to whom she was talking.
"Harry Potter," said Professor Trelawney in deep, vibrant tones, noticing him for the first time.
"Oh, hello," said Harry unenthusiastically.
"My dear boy," she said in very caring whispers. "The rumors, the stories, the chosen one, of course I've known for a very long time. The omens were never good, Harry, but why have you not returned to divination? For you, of all people, the subject is of utmost importance."
"Ah, Sybil, we all think our subjects most important," said a loud voice, and Slughorn appeared at Professor Trelawney's other side, his face very red, his velvet hat a little askew, a glass of mead in one hand, and an enormous mince pie in the other.
"But I don't think I've ever had such a natural at potions," said Slughorn, regarding Harry with a fond, if bloodshot, eye.
"Instinctive, you know, like his mother. I've only taught a few with this kind of ability, I can tell you that, Sybil. Why, even Severus."
To Harry's horror, Slughorn threw out an arm and seemed to scoop Snape out of thin air toward them.
"Stop skulking and come and join us, Severus," hiccuped Slughorn happily. "I was just talking about Harry's exceptional potions making. Some credit must go to you, of course. You taught him for 5 years."
Trapped with Slughorn's arm around his shoulders, Harry looked down his crooked nose at Harry. Snape looked down his crooked nose at Harry. His black eyes narrowed.
"Funny. I never had the impression I managed to teach Potter anything at all."
"Well, then, it's a natural ability," shouted Slughorn. "You should have seen what he gave me, first lesson, Draft of Living Death. Never had a student produce finer on a first attempt. I don't think even you, Severus."
"Really?" said Snape quietly, his eyes still boring into Harry, who felt a certain disquiet. The last thing he wanted was for Snape to start investigating the source of his newfound brilliance at potions.
"Remind me what other subjects you're taking, Harry?" asked Slughorn.
"Defense against the dark arts, charms, transfiguration, herbology."
"All the subjects required, in short, to be an auror," said Snape, with a faint sneer.
"Well, yeah, that's what I'd like to do," said Harry defiantly.
"And a great one you'll make, too," boomed Slughorn.
"I don't think you should be an auror, Harry," said Luna unexpectedly.
Everybody looked at her.
"The aurors are part of the Rotfang conspiracy. I thought everyone knew that. They're working to bring down the Ministry of Magic from within using a combination of dark magic and gum disease."
Harry inhaled half his mead up his nose as he started to laugh. Really, it had been worth bringing Luna just for this. Emerging from his goblet, coughing, sopping wet but still grinning, he saw something calculated to raise his spirits even higher. Draco Malfoy being dragged by the ear toward them by Argus Filch. Professor Slughorn, wheezed Filch, his jowls a-quiver in the maniacal light of mischief detection in his bulging eyes. I discovered this boy lurking in the upstairs corridor. He claims to have been invited to your party and to have been delayed in setting out. Did you issue him an invitation? Malfoy pulled himself free of Filch's grip, looking furious. All right, I wasn't invited, he said angrily. I was trying to gatecrash. Happy? No, I'm not, said Filch, a statement at complete odds with a glee on his face. You're in trouble, you are. Didn't the headmaster say that nighttime prowling's out unless you've got permission, didn't he, eh? That's all right, Argus, that's all right, said Slughorn, waving a hand. It's Christmas. It's not a crime to want to come to a party. Just this once, we'll forget any punishment. You may stay, Draco. Filch's expression of outraged disappointment was perfectly predictable. But why, Harry wondered, watching him, did Malfoy look almost equally unhappy? And why was Snape looking at Malfoy as though both angry and, was it possible, a little afraid? But almost before Harry had registered what he had seen, Filch had turned and shuffled away, muttering under his breath. Malfoy had composed his face into a smile and was thanking Slughorn for his generosity, and Snape's face was smoothly inscrutable once again. "It's nothing, nothing," said Slughorn, waving away Malfoy's thanks. "I did know your grandfather, after all." "He always spoke very highly of you, sir," said Malfoy quickly. "Said you were the best potion maker he'd ever known." Harry stared at Malfoy. It was not the sucking up that intrigued him. He had watched Malfoy do that to Snape for a long time. It was the fact that Malfoy did, after all, look a little ill. This was the first time he had seen Malfoy close up for ages. He now saw that Malfoy had dark shadows under his eyes and a distinctly grayish tinge to his skin. "I'd like a word with you, Draco," said Snape suddenly. "Oh, now, Severus," said Slughorn, hiccuping again. "It's Christmas. Don't be too hard." "I'm head of his house. I shall decide how hard, or otherwise, to be," said Snape curtly. "Follow me, Draco." They left, Snape leading the way, Malfoy looking resentful. Harry stood there for a moment, irresolute, and then said, "I'll be back in a minute, Luna, bathroom. "All right," she said cheerfully, and he thought he had heard her, as he hurried off into the crowd to resume the subject of the Rotfang conspiracy with Professor Trelawney, who seemed sincerely interested. It was easy, once out of the party, to pull his invisibility cloak out of his pocket and throw it over himself, for the corridor was quite deserted. What was more difficult was finding Snape and Malfoy. Harry ran down the corridor, the noise of his feet masked by the music and loud talk still issuing from Slughorn's office behind him. Perhaps Snape had taken Malfoy to the office in the dungeons, to his office in the dungeons. Perhaps he was escorting him back to the Slytherin common room. Harry pressed his ear against door after door as he dashed down the corridor until, with a great jolt of excitement, he crouched down to the last corridor of the keyhole of the last classroom in the corridor and heard voices. "Cannot afford mistakes, Draco, because if you are expelled..." "I didn't have anything to do with it, all right?" "I hope you are telling the truth, because it was both clumsy and foolish. Already you are suspected of having a hand in it." "Who suspects me?" said Malfoy angrily. "For the last time I didn't do it, okay? That Bell girl must have had an enemy nobody knows about. Don't look at me like that. I know what you're doing. I'm not stupid, but it won't work. I can stop you." There was a pause, and then Snape said quietly, "Ah, Aunt Bellatrix has been teaching you occlumency, I see. What thoughts are you trying to conceal from your master, Draco?" "I'm not trying to conceal anything from him. I just don't want you butting in." Harry pressed his ear still more closely against the keyhole. What had happened to make Malfoy speak to Snape like this? Snape, toward whom he had always shown respect, even liking. "So that is why you have avoided me this term? You have feared my interference? You realize that had anybody else failed to come to my office when I had told them repeatedly to be there, Draco?" "So put me in detention. Report me to Dumbledore," jeered Malfoy. There was another pause. Then Snape said, "You know perfectly well that I do not wish to do either of those things." "You better stop telling me to come to your office, then." "Listen to me," said Snape, his voice so low now that Harry had to push his ear very hard against the keyhole to hear. "I'm trying to help you. I swore to your mother that I would protect you. I made the unbreakable vow, Draco." "Looks like you'll have to break it, then, because I don't need your protection. It's my job. He gave it to me, and I'm doing it. I've got a plan. It's going to work. It's just taking a little bit longer than I thought it would." "What is your plan?" "It's none of your business." "If you tell me what you are trying to do, I can assist you." "I've got all the assistance I need, thanks. I'm not alone." "You were certainly alone tonight, which was foolish in the extreme, wandering the corridors without lookouts or backup. Those are elementary mistakes." "I would have had Crabbe and Goyle with me if you hadn't put them in detention." "Keep your voice down," spat Snape, for Malfoy's voice had risen excitedly. "If your friends Crabbe and Goyle intended to pass their defense against the Dark Arts Owl this time around, they'll need to work a little harder than they are doing at present." "What does it matter?" said Malfoy. "Defense against the Dark Arts, it's all a joke, isn't it? An act, like any of us needs protection against the Dark Arts." "It is an act that is crucial to success, Draco," said Snape. "Where do you think I would have been all these years if I had not known how to act? Now listen to me. You are being incautious, wandering around at night, getting yourself caught, and if you are placing your reliance in assistants like Crabbe and Goyle..." "They're not the only ones. I've got other people on my side. Better people." "Then why not confide in me, and I can..." "I know what you're up to. You want to steal my glory." There was another pause, then Snape said coldly, "You are speaking like a child. I quite understand that your father's capture and imprisonment has upset you, but..." Harry had barely a second's warning. He heard Malfoy's footsteps on the other side of the door and flung himself out of the way just as it burst open. Malfoy was striding away down the corridor, past the open door of Slughorn's office, around the distant corner, and out of sight. Hardly daring to breathe, Harry remained crouched as Snape emerged from the office, from the classroom slowly. His expression unfathomable, he returned to the party. Harry remained on the floor, hidden beneath the cloak, his mind racing. And that's the end of chapter 15. Chapter 16 is called A Very Frosty Christmas. And I hope you like that, my baby girl. And it's bedtime for the pup and the kitten. Sweet dreams, my lover.